Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning, people on Zoom. Okay, I'll start by offering a land and ancestor acknowledgement. I invite us to dedicate our time together this morning to all who are suffering. We recognize the Dakota and Anishinaabe peoples whose descendants are still here and whose lands we occupy. Let us also offer deep gratitude to our Indian, Chinese, and Japanese spiritual ancestors for all they have given us and for the chance to practice here today. Let us stand with the Black community who have suffered from the decimation and loss of the Rondo neighborhood in which we practice. We are all connected. May we work together for the liberation of all beings. And may we stand side by side in community care. So the title of my talk is A Practice of Peacemaking. So it's probably been maybe 4 weeks now since I came across a CD in my mother's belongings. So I've been packing up her condo, and she is now in memory care. But this involved many trips back and forth from the condo to our new place, to the Goodwill, to the consignment store, to the dumpster, to our house. And this went on for many days. So I listened to this CD over and over in my car as I was driving. And after listening to it, I'd like to offer a Dharma talk on this. And so I searched for a book with the same title or a transcript, and I couldn't find one. But you can still buy the two CD set for those of you who still have CD players. So some of the tracks on the CDs include, and this is not all of them, How We Can Learn to Love Our Enemies, What Is Interbeing, he coined that term.
Can you say who the CD is?
Did I not say who that? Thank you. So this CD is by Thich Nhat Hanh, and the title of it is Peacemaking, How to Be It, How to Do It, Transforming Anger Through Awareness. So some of the tracks on this are, I'll keep going with that, How Conscious Breathing Affects Our Thoughts. Is peace possible? What forms of political protest are most skillful? What is America's place on the world stage? Is violence ever justified? That piqued my curiosity. How can nonviolence be of use on an international level? And so this CD was recorded at a Vietnamese family's home in Houston, Texas, while they all had tea. And it also includes an interview. So this morning I'd like to explore his teachings on peace. And I won't be able to get to all that good stuff you just heard. And I'll really start with just the beginnings, because, well, that's a wonderful place to start. I just think that in these times, even though we're not in maybe a conventional war with a name like the Vietnam War, there's war all over. Little wars, big wars, little conflicts, big conflicts, and So I think this is, his message for me anyway was timely, and it may not always be easy to talk about peace and how to do it when there's a lot of activation happening. And I know for me, even listening to the CD, I was like, oh, wow. So you know, I'd like to share his teachings, and he taught how to live it in a body peace. He was a renowned peace activist and Vietnamese monk who founded the Order of Inner Being, which is an international community of Buddhists in the Plum Village tradition in France. Well, it's all over the world now. And I feel like he's still teaching. He's still teaching me. He wrote over 100 books, many recordings and interviews. And a main theme of his that I am noticing is that in order to be peace and to live it, we need to take up a non-dualistic approach to our activities in the world. And he really embodied this because he took up that approach. He didn't take a side in Vietnam and was exiled for it. Well, he was exiled for that and for his protest of the war. So neither side wanted him because he wasn't one of them. And lucky for the rest of the world, because he spent the next 40 years teaching deep listening, nonviolent communication, and this approach of seeing things in a non-dualistic way. At a workshop I attended, what was it, 2 weeks ago maybe, with Roshi Diane Musho Hamilton, she used a phrase that I'd never heard before for non-duality, and that was ultimate belonging. Mm-hmm. And I heard that, and I was like, oh, I really like that. Because in non-duality, there is no conflict. And non-duality, meaning everything is connected or interconnected and co-arising. Nothing is separate. So taking this non-dual awareness or this non-dual stance and bringing it into the world with us is something that he's advocating. And if we think about this from a non-dual stance, not belonging is illusion. So we all belong wherever we are, all the time, but it sure feels better to realize that, or to remember that, or to consider that. I mean, when I do it, it just calms my nervous system. So this workshop was on managing conflict and nurturing connection in groups. And I know that I have had a sense of not belonging before in groups. And maybe some of you have too. It doesn't feel good. It's kind of a lonely place. And so really bringing this kind of remembrance with me, that practice resonates with me. So in the beginning parts of the CD, he really focuses on, and he really focuses on this throughout anyway, but on that it's important to make peace with ourselves, especially our anger, and to do this before we are trying to go out and make peace with the rest of the world. He's talking about doing nonviolence to our emotions and our bodies and minds. When we feel what we feel, whether we're alone or with others, we breathe with our emotions and make peace with ourselves. I also think sitting with and noticing, for me, thoughts that kind of fan the flames of anger, thoughts that really lead me to righteous anger. It's really important for me to notice. What are the thoughts that do that? Because when I get into righteous anger, I'm really kind of looking for a fight. And a fight happens, even if it's just inside my own mind. So having an awareness of them without indulging is tricky. It's not easy for me. So making peace with ourselves and making time for practice are major teachings of his on these CDs. So when I first heard the CDs, I thought, oh, Thich Nhat Hanh, yes, this is so good. This is so good to hear. I'm somewhat familiar with his teachings. And I kind of had this feeling of, yeah, I get it. But I listened to them again and again and again, and I'm like, oh. These teachings seem so simple and kind of obvious, but if I just let them sit on the surface, that's where it stays. And so I had the really wonderful opportunity to go deep with these things. I mean, he has teachings like, tell the truth. You know, but by the end of listening to it for the fifth time, I'm like, wow, that's so profound. So I knew I wanted to do a talk on this, and when I got home, I started to transcribe the CDs on a stereo system, and maybe I just wasn't working it correctly, but I couldn't just rewind it a little bit to catch those couple words I missed. I'd have to go all the way back to the beginning of the track. So, needless to say, more listening, lots of listening. And it was great because as I was doing this, my circumstances were changing in my life, and so I got to practice this in different circumstances. So in our Buddhist tradition, we have teachings and people to point out the things that he's teaching, and it's really nice. So as I was listening to these things over and over, it occurred to me, this is our practice. This is the way it's been since the Buddha's time. This kind of repetition of, you know, we chant the same chants over and over, and their teachings. And I hear something new or that I need to hear, or I get a deeper understanding when I chant our chants. So he talks about the need for practice and years of practice of mindfulness and meditation before we can do some things skillfully and, as he puts it, intelligently. And he uses an extreme hypothetical example of if somebody breaks into your house and is threatening violence to you and or your family, it's really, really hard to to act with compassion and intelligence. So I find that this is true even in way less extreme situations. Lots of practice. So, you know, he's practicing that you have to do it every day in order to be able to do it more easily when you're confronted with an actual situation. And then these are his words. It may be a little bit difficult. You know, if you find yourself in a situation like that, because you're not used to it. But every time you practice, when you're irritated, every time when you're angered, you can deal with your anger more easily. He says, first you realize that your anger is yourself, which is a non-dualistic view. Those are his words. Therefore, we do not do violence to our anger or try to suppress it. He says you have to deal with your anger in the most non-violent way possible because of the very fact that your anger is yourself. So when we can master being nonviolent to our anger and ourselves, we can have a chance at being nonviolent when meeting violence in a rare or unexpected encounter. Staying with it, we get to feel it and begin to understand the roots. This is kind of a message he's giving. And I am going to give an example where it's been recently challenging for me to just sit and not react out of irritation or impatience and sometimes anger. And it involves my mother, who I use sometimes in Dharma talk, and she is, just to make everybody feel more okay about this, she is says it is perfectly fine and then wants to hear all about it. So she is in the early stages of dementia, and sometimes she asks the same question over and over and over again. So I have to listen to it over and over, but for her, it's the first time she's asking it each time. And I realize this, so I want to be able to listen to the question as if I'm hearing it for the first time. At one point it occurred to me, I am hearing it for the first time. But this isn't always easy for me, especially if there's kind of an accusatory tone. I can feel this, but... An analogy came to mind with this. I get lots of opportunities for practice, right? It's kind of like if there's a movie director and I say my line and the director says, no, again. Okay. I do it again. No, this time with more feeling or whatever it is. And because it's such a condensed form of practice, I really can see things transform in myself and in my mother and in our relationship with this. It's really cool. So lots of do-overs. And in a way, every moment is a do-over. That's how I've come to see it. So Thich Nhat Hanh's teaching is that compassion in action is peacemaking. So with that last example, with my mother, as I practice, I'm making peace with her, myself, my emotions, my humanness, and all beings. That, again, is that non-dualistic view. And even though listening, deep listening, breathing, getting curious about the roots of my anger seems passive. I believe it's a powerful action. So I'll share some more segments that I transcribed. Let's see, this is the second track on disc one. He says, sometimes we think our anger is our enemy, that we should fight it, suppress it, that we should throw it out. Our anger is like our bombs. It is us. And this was recorded in 2002, which would have been around the Gulf War. And this continuing with his words, our bombs have a root in us. The Buddhist teaching is, this is because that is. This is not because that is not. This is like this because that is like that. If there is anger, it means there is something else also that is the origin of anger. If the bombs are there, there is something that is there also. It is our way of life which has brought about the presence of bombs. So if we want to deal only with the bombs, if we want to throw out the bomb and keep the cause of the bomb, keep our way of doing things, this is not possible because the cause of the bomb is going to produce more bombs. Our anger is like that also. We want to expel anger, but the cause of our anger is still there, so it's going to produce more anger. I feel like I want to take a breath with that. So I asked myself, how is my current way of life producing the things, the circumstances that I want to get rid of, and what aspects of my lifestyle do I want to change? Do I need to change? I see this metaphorical, I can see the bomb as metaphorical too, and it's like I don't want to water those seeds, but how might I be? And so he's suggesting that starting with examining anger, including my anger toward the violence and destruction I see happening in the world. You know, this is tricky. And he's not saying it's wrong to be angry. Not at all. He's not saying don't do something about it. He protested. He went to protests. He was very, very involved. And I think he's really making the point of it's not out there. It's all connected. I do think this is challenging. I'll say I felt nervous about giving this talk in these times. But it's Thich Nhat Hanh, and it rang, you know, just very true and seemed very important. He says, I would like to share with you the way we deal with anger as Buddhists. When we notice there is anger in us, we refrain from saying things and doing things because saying things or doing things in that state of being is dangerous. It may cause damage that you regret later. What you have to do at that time is just to breathe. Breathing in, I know that I am angry. Breathing out, I know that I am angry. Breathing in, I know that anger is still in me. Breathing out, I know that anger is still in me. Breathing in, I know that I am anger at this moment. Breathing out, I know that anger is me at this moment. You may ask why. What is the use of doing so, breathing on your anger? There is a difference already between the two states of being. And I see this. When I do this, this emotion is moving and changing. This is practicing peace. And then he goes on, he says, once you have produced the awareness of your anger by breathing, then your anger is now sponsored by your awareness. And it requires feeling it in your body, sitting and breathing with it. And it takes time to feel it move. So this kind of requires patience too. But if we do take the time to feel it and sit with it, we might have a chance of it showing us what it's all about, showing us its roots. At one point in the CD, he describes bombs as the fruit of dualistic thinking. I just went, whoa. Yeah. Okay. Us against them. We're going to bomb them. And then he said, which is why in our meditation practice, here's another challenging one, we should be a bomb to revise our way of doing things. This is the non-dualistic way. Then he says more on meditation. To meditate is not to transform yourself into a battlefield, the good side fighting the evil, because you know that evil and good belong to the same reality in yourself. Non-duality leads to non-violence. Dealing with your body with non-violence, dealing with your feelings with non-violence, anger is a zone of energy. You cannot reduce that energy to nothingness. You can only transform that energy into another kind of energy. And you can do it by practicing awareness, looking deeply into the nature of your feeling. He says, if we keep looking with that concentration, our anger will have to open itself for us to see. It cannot resist. It's like a flower with the rays of sun. I'll read a little more in this segment. He said, meditation has two aspects. The first aspect is to stop. And the second aspect is to look. If you do not stop, we cannot look. We have to stop in order to generate that kind of attention, that kind of concentration. And with that kind of attention and concentration, we can look and look deeply into the nature of things. In our case, the nature of a feeling. So then he gives examples of, you know, when somebody says something cruel, we can get curious and just ask the question, why might they have done that? And just sit with it. Oops. Did everybody hear that last part? Is it still working?
Can't hear.
Try clipping it to the other side. It's a microphone.
It's my husband.
It's okay.
Thanks. Let's hope it holds for a bit. Well, so just asking and being curious. That's a pause. It's something I think can be helpful. Okay. So he identified in the CD other ways to embody and practice compassion and peace, reconciliation, deep listening, understanding and sharing your understanding. And I love those because this happens at Clouds. We have all these groups and ways to practice these things. Being aware that what I do to you, I do to myself. Telling the simple truth without just justifying or rationalizing. And then he talks that, well, somebody in an interview asked him, well, how do we take care of our veterans? And he said that, well, veterans have pains we can see and hidden pains, and that it's really important to try to understand all the pain and to witness this. And when we start to understand it, to let the person know we are understanding, we're seeing it. And then he says, project it on a big screen for everyone to see. And he meant this literally and figuratively, because he applauds filmmakers and artists for doing just that, you know, particularly with documentaries. He wants those hidden pains to be visible, you know, so they can be seen. He says not only is hidden pain a cause of suffering, it is also dangerous because the lack of awareness of it can be the cause of creating more pain and continuing a cycle of pain unknowingly. So there's one more challenging thing that I actually got from an essay he wrote regarding veterans. But before I read that little excerpt, I want to acknowledge that the harm, the great harm that is happening in our country, and that is not easy. And I know for myself, I feel sometimes like I'm just one small little person. What can I do? This is so overwhelming. I feel kind of powerless. And honestly, these teachings have given me a sense of agency. And like, this is something I can actually do. I can sit with my anger. I can take a non-dualistic stance. So I want to just acknowledge that this is a sensitive subject. And while difficult to talk about, I believe it's important to talk about. I also want to share that in another interview, I did a deep dive on Thich Nhat Hanh. He said, because somebody else asked him about, oh, what's the right thing to do, the right way to be compassionate, and he said, if your intention is to do good and you do it with compassion, this is a Buddhist action. Okay. And this is coming from someone.
Sorry.
Did it do it again?
It's kind of buoy. Oh. Well, the thing fell off.
Oh.
That fell off. All right. Let's try this again.
Again, I wanted to just acknowledge Thich Nhat Hanh's experience with suffering and with peacemaking. I mean, this has been his whole life, and he knew suffering. He experienced it himself. The Vietnam War was very long, was going on way before the United States committed combat troops. So he knows about this when he's teaching this. This is from an essay titled "When the Parades End." Oh, I'm just gonna. That's okay. When the parades end, we need to look deeply into the souls of veterans to see the real suffering that war causes, not only to soldiers but to everyone. He says, we cannot imagine the long-term effects of watering so many seeds of war. And again, I can think of war as all the conflicts. Even so, we cannot divide reality into two camps, the violent and the nonviolent, and stand in one camp while attacking the other. We cannot blame and condemn those we feel are responsible for wars and social injustice without recognizing violence in ourselves. So he's not saying ignore the harm, He's not saying don't speak out against oppression and social injustice. He is not saying that. He has done that. He is saying don't do it without recognizing violence in ourselves, the non-dual nature of the situation. And he goes on to say in this essay, if we look deeply into the weapons of war, we will see our own minds, our own prejudices, fears, and ignorance. To work for peace is to uproot war from ourselves and from the hearts and men, the hearts of people. To do this, we must learn to listen in a way that helps us to understand the suffering of others, to see the real losses, the real casualties of war. Just by listening deeply, we can already alleviate a great deal of pain. This is the beginning of healing. How much? I think I'm running out of time here. I will just share one aspect of non-duality and the way he taught it that I really liked. He talked about the left hand and the right hand, and that they are both made up of the same elements. And then, I don't know, somebody, if it was Red Pine or somebody, I wish I remembered who, or I wish I knew who, used an example of a stick. In our non-dualistic way of thinking, we see the stick, we see a left end of the stick, we see a right end of the stick, and if I want to get rid of the right end of the stick and I get out my saw and I cut off the right end of the stick, I have a stick with a left end. Not only that, I have two sticks with a left end and a right end. So this is helpful for me to remember, because sometimes if I've been spending a little too much time with the news, I have this fantasy flash in my mind of, oh, wouldn't it be nice if there was an island somewhere with people that all thought like I do, and we would get along so wonderfully. But if I stay with that fantasy long enough, I'm like, oh, no. There would be differences, maybe even some polar opposites, and here we are. And this is what humans do. It's so we practice. So our practices of zazen and mindfulness, practices of looking and listening deeply, are simply put, peacemaking. And that's what I've got. Thank you.
We do have time for questions or comments.
There's a question over there.
Love this talk, love this topic, love your approach. Thank you so much for broaching the idea of peace. Can you say more, especially with your background in counseling, about conflict? Because at some point you said in non-dualistic thought there's no conflict. Can you say more about like peace and conflict or anything like that? Whatever thoughts you have.
Yes. Conflict was kind of my job, really, as a therapist. So the teaching was that there's no conflict in non-duality, you know, where we cannot hang out all the time. And so I think, and this is coming from my training as a therapist and my experience, is that a lot of conflict comes from a fear of not being accepted, not being understood, not, you know, a fear of being abandoned in whatever way. And so when, and part of my job was to slow down whatever process was happening up here or whatever process was happening in dialogue, just to really slow that down and let one person speak and let them continue to speak and let them continue to speak. And so many times I would see the partner just go, "What? Oh, I didn't know that." And so I think taking the time to slow down and to feel it. And then I would also notice that when a person would start talking about the conflict, it would get deeper and deeper, and then all of a sudden there'd be emotion. And then the partner, so they could feel their emotion, and the partner could see their emotion. And so this is part of Thich Nhat Hanh's message of, it's so important to let the other person know, oh, I see it. And not only that, to just really talk about it in general, kind of project it on that big screen. Does that answer your question?
Okay, thank you.
Good question. So in any kind of very volatile circumstances, there's winners and losers. So, you know, I understand the non-dual, but it is heart-wrenching, I guess, to see who's losing, right? And then it's like you don't want to take sides, but somebody suffers in a much more obvious way, right? And in an inequity kind of situation. So.
Right, I think acknowledging that what people are suffering, you know, and saying that, putting it out there, for me, one leap that I know for myself, if I get into that righteous anger, now I'm not just speaking in opposition to the harm and the injustice. I'm going for the person.
Yeah.
You know? And that's really human, really natural. I don't want to beat myself up, and I don't think anybody, I think it's just so understandable. I think Thich Nhat Hanh is just saying it doesn't work. Oh, and at one point in the CDs, he was sharing all this, and then he said, "This is the only way." Mm-hmm. And then he said, "I don't think there is another way. I just don't." And, you know, I mean, I could really feel his sincerity in that.
You mean way to peace?
Way to peace. Thank you. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. One more question.
How do you apply this to our current situation and, like, working towards maintaining democracy in our country kind of situation? And I know you're not, in Buddhism, you're not supposed to have goals, per se, but...
I didn't hear that last part. In Buddhism,
you're not supposed to have goals, you're supposed to... Whatever. Being present in the moment. But from my life experience and observation in my career and all that, and observing politics, action does have consequences and makes change. So I guess one thing I've been thinking about, I've been watching documentaries on the civil rights movement and how effective that was, and the nonviolence aspect of Martin King, and wondering, like, how do we learn from that and apply that in our current circumstances? But I'm also just wondering about what you've talked about today. It's been a really good talk. How would you apply that in taking action?
Can you repeat a little bit, because it's hard to hear what she's asking?
Oh, I will try to paraphrase and summarize a little bit. I hope I get it right. How do we take these teachings and support democracy? And is that That's a very brief.
How do you, let's see, I'll just speak from my belief. My belief is we actually can't just sit still and watch. So things are dramatically happening in our country, and I feel like we have to take action. So how do we apply this so that it's effective and we can move towards peace and a better space for humanity?
Yeah, so there's practicing this on the individual level of our own practice, making peace with ourselves. And he does talk about this calls for leadership, skilled leadership. And that he gave an example of after one war, a president, or during the war, or something like that, saying, "And God bless America." And he was saying, he could have said, "And God bless everyone." So again, that's kind of a leader taking a non-dual approach. By just recognizing that our pain and our joy, the wins and losses, they're all shared. And I think it's important to say something and to do something. Sometimes not saying something is a form of violence. So he does not specifically say what to do. He's just saying, understand the roots, do it with compassion, and I'm getting the signal.
I just want to add one thing, though, to correct. It's not that there's no goals.
Yes. Yes. Right.
There can be a goal. There should be a goal. You can have a goal. The practice is not to attach to the outcome. Like, I have a goal, and I want something to happen, but it might not happen. But I still can work really hard to prevent suffering. So that... I just want to make sure I'm more clear.
Thanks.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Kato.